Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm looking forward to this pod.
Indeed.
I'm imagining there will be a lot of people who are listening to this podcast for the first time, inspired by how amazing that rugby was. Let me tell you, you found the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, the premier podcast in the world. We're going to get into it in a minute. I just need you to know, after that weekend of rugby, I have come armed with every bit of music we might need to reflect how epic that was.
How much music is that?
I've got the Inception horns.
Yes.
I've got the Carmen Burana. Yeah, I've got the 999 theme tune from back in the day.
Good.
And obviously for when we talk about some of the players we love the most, still got the Brokeback Mountain music.
He seems to have missed one.
What's that?
The Corp DM music from Super League when they score a try.
Oh, I might try and find it in the next couple of minutes, but I've got this bit of music now to start the podcast. Here we go, hands in, pod on three. One, two, three,
pod!
Where the hell do we start after that weekend of rugby? Thank you once again for finding us, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. You can catch us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, on iTunes, on the Acast app is where you can listen and leave your reviews on iTunes and all the rest of it. Thank you very much for doing so. JB's here.
Good day, Tim.
Phil's here.
Hi, Tim.
I'm Tim. And can you remember a better day of rugby than that?
No. Not
personally or internationally.
What out of your personal memory was better than that?
Getting dragged up on a coach to Vale of Loon, getting spanked by a team that have lost their last 12 games, and then getting back on the coach from Vale of Loon and going home. Miserable. So somewhat clouded memories of this weekend.
I can't remember anything even close to that. Nothing at all.
It was unreal. It was unreal. Because this might be the first time in a long time we've seen all the games played and none of the teams know how they need to play them.
Yes.
Except for Wales. Wales knew they had to score a load of points.
But even when they scored a load of points, they don't know how many is going to be enough.
No.
Which is the same with Ireland. Mm. They knew how many to beat Wales, but then they had no idea what England can possibly do afterwards.
So they've just got to go out and score, and then left England basically trying to catch everyone up.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
It was a really, really special day, and I hope that this brilliant brand of no defence rugby, long may it continue.
Oh, I thought this weekend was International No Defence Weekend.
Yeah, I think you're right there, yeah. Jay. I think it
that would
was.
Explain that.
UN Disarmament Week.
The fact of the matter is that we're not going to get that in the World Cup. We're not going to get that in most Six Nations. It was just one of those days. There was good weather. There was every team knowing they just had to score loads of points, or pretty much they might as well pack up and go home.
Yeah, Wales knew that. I think they were 27 points behind or something like that going into their game. So they knew they had to score a lot of points. And that first half was very conservative considering what they needed to do.
Yeah.
And then the second half, it just exploded, didn't it? Seven tries.
Also, you've got to remember, it was the fact that it was the three top teams against the three bottom teams just happened to be the way it fell like that. So the three bottom teams were going all out. They had nothing to lose. The top teams knew they had to get points. It was just the perfect storm to provide one of the best weekends of rugby you can imagine, and solidifying the fact that this is the best annual rugby tournament in the world.
Yes.
Comfortably.
How do we make rugby like that all the time? Because this weekend is so good, it's almost ruined everything going forward. I mean, we watched the LV Cup final today.
A really good final.
But we just couldn't get into it because it didn't compare to the excitement and the exhilaration that we've just witnessed.
Yeah, well, I kind of felt that Wales, what sparked Wales into life in that first game was injury to Halfpenny. Halfpenny goes down, Scott Williams comes on. I don't know, he must have had like a message on from Warren Gatland saying, all right, boys, go and party. And that's exactly what they did. He and Liam Williams make that team so much more attacking, and they just go.
Yeah, Liam Williams, it's partly... So Liam Williams went to fullback and he was willing to run everything from anywhere, which was great. And the other side of it was, it felt like in that second half, Italy just switched off a bit. They had no defensive shape. They had no commitment to the tackle. They were trying to tackle one up and falling off tackles. But it just made it so exciting, didn't it?
Yeah. It's hard to see what you can take out of the Wales game because Italy were poor in the second half and they just opened up. But the one player that's really stood out for me was probably Ken Owens. Ken Owens looked absolutely... Well, actually, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
Say Ken Owens. Ken Owens, Scott Williams, Liam Williams. The guys who you wouldn't consider as regulars.
Yeah, exactly that. I've got a lot of time for Liam Williams. And I think you called it before the tournament that you hoped he'd be picked instead of...
No, I didn't actually. I wasn't a huge fan of him.
I was saying...
Was it Phil saying?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It was when Jay was arguing that Gatland just picks the best players, and we were saying that he just picks the biggest...
Massive players.
Yeah, the biggest players.
That boy comes to play. He just loves playing rugby.
Yeah, runs... Might not be the biggest, might not be the most technically proficient, but just... Exciting, just runs everything from anywhere.
He strikes me as the kind of one of those South Walian types with a bit of a screw loose. Mind you, most of them are, to be fair.
And Mr. North.
Yeah.
Just the phenom that he is. He's. I know it's really simple and there's not. But that little step and go for a man that size to stand up Luke McLean and then just. There you go, I'm gone.
Yeah. I just hope he's not turning into the Patrick Cliver of rugby, which is when the opposition's rubbish, he'll score score a shed load.
But then when he does play against the best teams, they know how dangerous he is, so they will overmark him.
What about him carrying Izzy Folau on his shoulder for the Lions?
Yeah, I love that highlight because he does carry Izzy Folau and then they cut it off because he then plants his head on the floor. I think he either goes off or he's injured for a long time.
He looked in a bad way after that. He definitely should have had concussion protocol after that.
Mm. So how did you find watching that game, Jay, being a Welshman?
Exhilarating. I mean, the first half was a bit worrying.
How worried were you at halftime?
Well, I wasn't that worried because I was getting changed to play Vale of Loon. But we had a smartphone and we were actually watching it until kickoff because that's how detailed our warm-ups are for on part now. So I watched it up until, I think, the second to last try, which was, was it Italian try or was it Wales try?
Italy was the last try.
Yeah,
the very last try was the Italian try.
Which was a brilliant little twist in the storyline, wasn't it?
It was the
theatre that was Saturday the 21st of March.
This is in no way sour grapes, and it's certainly not... Is it the Welsh... Who had that headline today? The Welsh Post or someone?
What
Wales
did it say?
Online or someone like that. At least we beat the champions.
Yes. Really, it was some Welsh paper, wasn't kind of. It?
That's very much like Worcester when they got relegated last year, trying to draw some sort of silver lining after they beat Oyonnax, who a couple of weeks before had beaten Toulon in the top 14, saying...
I don't think it's even Toulon.
We
I think
beat the team...
It was.
Was it Toulon?
We beat the team who beat the team that won the European Cup.
Yeah. Well done,
guys. You're clutching at straws there.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like it. It's in bad taste for start. But I kind of don't think that winning the Six Nations was the be-all or end-all. At the end of this tournament, I think Wales feel like the strongest team.
Well, I think...
It's hard to say. I mean, those three teams that finished, they could have been... Any one of them could be one, two and three.
I think... All the teams, bar Scotland and Italy, will take a lot of positives out of it.
Mm.
The way that England finished, and although they didn't win, but the way they actually played rugby and to put 55 points on France is quite incredible. And besides the Ireland game, England played some really, really good rugby.
I'd just like to have an appeal to the RFU. In Wales and Scotland, and maybe even Ireland, when the international teams play, the club teams don't play. Can we stop playing on international weekends, please? Please. Because I've played every weekend other than last weekend.
Oh, you mean down at amateur level?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think there is some sense here because in Wales, there's only like 3 million of us and there is literally a chance that you might get called up. So they say, right, no one's playing, just on the off. But in England, we play through it, which is just a nonsense.
You'd have to restructure the league, have fewer teams, and then you can have the weekends off. So I only have 10 teams in each league.
Yeah, or just play a bit longer or whatever it may be. Yeah. They need to do something or early kickoffs. The other thing as well...
If both teams to agree.
The other argument is, in Wales, is people like to go and watch the games, and obviously it's a small nation, and people that play rugby go and watch rugby. Whereas Twickenham, if you don't own a Range Rover, you're probably not going.
Unless you're on good terms with Canterbury, as the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast is, who are brilliant, and we all want to thank them for their help and support through the Six Nations. Nice one, Canterbury. They have made sure that the winner of our Six Nations Fantasy Rugby Tournament, which featured over 600 teams, and thank you very much for getting involved, but we'll get to the winner in a little bit, but that winner will be getting £250 worth of Canterbury Stash. Lovely Canterbury Stash.
Yeah, very nice gear, isn't it?
Very quickly, before we get back into the Six Nations, because I'm conscious that there was other rugby going on, did you see Bismarck Duplessis red in Super Rugby?
I've seen
his ridiculous kick.
Got a four-week ban.
I know nothing about any Super Rugby this weekend.
Just kick someone in the face. That's it. I'm just wrapping up the rugby as quick as you can. Because you don't want to hear about it. We don't want to talk about it as much. LV Cup final. Yeah, Ben Spencer, last minute penalty.
Whoa,
denied Exeter.
We can talk about the LV Cup final.
Yeah,
Saracens win. Move on.
All right, we'll talk about it a bit more. If we have time, we'll talk about it a bit more later. Here, I want to mention this one as well, because really good weekend in the Championship, which is hotting up and getting towards the business end. Bristol narrowly beat Rotherham.
By 2 points.
2 points at Rotherham, 25-27. And Jersey won by 2 points over Worcester.
Yes, have that, Dean Ryan.
So Jersey beat the team who beat the team who beat the team that won the European Cup.
Jesus.
So
hang on.
Jersey are now reigning European champions, right?
Yes.
It does make sense, yeah. No, reigning European champions from 2 years ago.
From 2 years,
because it still counts.
Yes.
So is there anything else to dissect with that Welsh one? I mean, it was the second... I was watching the second half and just felt a bit despondent. I was really excited at half-time thinking, right, this is set up. We all made our predictions. The predictions last week, you two said Ireland would come out on top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said this would be the time when Stuart Lancaster has the bookend. At one end, there was the Millennium Stadium defeat in 2013. And then the other bookend was going to be yesterday. And I was getting very, very excited at half-time in the Welsh game. I felt despondent by full-time.
Yeah.
But some awesome rugby.
One thing we got tweeted was, no one really celebrated with George North when he scored his tries.
Yeah.
Do you reckon... The tweet was suggesting, is there any kind of dislike in the camp?
Right.
Does he not get in with people?
Because there's more goals to be scored. That kind of attitude, right. Like next jobs.
So they were... Yeah, George North scored as George North does.
Yep.
Let's just get on, get
bit,
back,
bit
set
of urgency, up and back.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it.
It was quite interesting when, I think it was his second try, when Liam Williams made the break and put him through. And George North had 40 metres to go, and Liam Williams was already running back to his own sticks.
Is that because he's got so much confidence in George North?
It must be.
He's one hell of a player. He is one hell of a player.
Can't believe that's true. I think you're probably right. It's more next job, isn't it?
I can't imagine that. Why would you not like the guy that puts food on your table?
And then, so Ireland must have been watching that or aware of it as they were warming up. And basically, it's like, right, same goes. We just got to dominate.
This is upsetting, this game.
You see, Ireland have relied upon and have played such error-free, as we've talked about many times, error-free, risk-free.
Right, we've got to stop using these cliches for Ireland after they got battered by Wales. And I know
that's not a cliche. That's what they. But that's been their game plan.
Yeah,
they've made
the least. Okay. Let's be clear.
Least offloads. Least errors. Least penalties against.
Let's be very clear. Everyone's game plan is to make the least errors. So that it wouldn't be novel.
No, but they were playing a low-risk strategy.
Low-risk strategy, yeah.
Against Wales?
No, in general.
Yeah, and against England. And even against... They only scored two tries against Italy, I think. It was two or three, wasn't it? They played that low-risk rugby.
No, I will concede that.
But yeah, when they
had to...
So they knew, going into the Scotland game, they had to win by 20 clear points.
Did they have to win... Did they have to beat...
Beat
Scotland by 20 clear points, regardless of... So say if Wales hadn't won by the margin that they won, what would they need to win by to beat England?
They were 4 points behind England. in terms of differential, weren't they?
Yeah, they went into the Scotland game knowing they had to beat Scotland by at least 20 points
to jump above
Wales, but then not knowing what would happen with England. Yeah, so they knew they needed to be more than 20 points ahead. It's quite interesting though when they actually did get ahead. So like you were saying before, Tim, they were playing some great rugby, yeah, running rugby, free flowing, offloading. And then when they did actually get past that 20 point barrier, they started playing the territory game again. They started kicking the corners, putting the up and unders up and having the good kick chase. So it's quite interesting the shift between that.
I noticed that, Phil, and I thought that was an indication of a really mature team. Because, like, you know, England's defence just completely went. They sort of knew they had to just go attack. Whereas Ireland, there seemed to be a lot more control over what they were doing, really like cool heads,
yeah,
kind of thing.
And it's interesting how much of that will come from Joe Schmidt, because every time it panned to him in the box, the coaching box, he was on a microphone to someone,
yeah,
passing down information, telling exactly what they need to be doing at this stage.
Remote control on Johnny Sexton.
Yeah, basically.
Kick X.
Remote control on Sean O'Brien, who was...
He started to play well, because I must admit, I was starting to think he's not going to be the force he was on the Lions when he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But he's been injured and not seen anything of him since. This has probably been his best game all season.
Do you know what?
Yeah, and he's only played...
Yeah.
I think he played one game for Leinster, then... the Wolfhounds and then the Six Nations, of which he's missed a couple because of a couple of knocks.
I tell you what, looking at the Sevens now, he is coming into form. I think head and shoulders now is Sam Warburton. Sam Warburton just looks class.
Deuce Atois
was awesome. Rob Shaw was
very,
awesome.
Very I know there's a lot of fans here of Captain Average, and he did do well. But
again.
Well, yeah, but that's what he is, captain consistently average. Warburton is just magnificent.
Well, just going back, because I think this whole day, actually, the one team that will get mentioned the least, but probably contributed the most to this amazing day of rugby was Italy. Because had Italy not just gone, right, yeah, we're done, go on, we'll just open the gate, off you go, Wales, and we wouldn't have seen this side of Ireland, because as Phil said... If it wasn't out of necessity, they wouldn't have played this brand of rugby.
Yeah.
So they opened up, and then England opened up as well.
Yeah, which allowed France to open up as well.
Who is the Irish guy? The Italian fella. He always comes on, it seems, as a sub. He's a playmaker, but he's got the face of, like, a 50-year-old.
Or Cara.
Yeah. My word, he looks old. He looks like he's got the same agent as Stanley Jean.
Tough paper round.
Yeah. Didn't he play a bit of a rugby league about... Is he one of the...
O'Cara,
yeah.
O'Cara played rugby league?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, he's a real man then.
about 15 years ago in Australia.
Australia, okay. Yeah. Oh, is he an Aussie?
I think so, yeah. I could be wrong about that.
So with the confidence, because again, going back to Ireland style, with the confidence that Ireland will have got from knowing that when they need to, they can open up and find space. Again, they're doing it against Scotland, who have had a good defence, to be fair.
Oh, I felt sorry for Scotland.
But do you think, you know, Ireland, World Cup, pressure, they're going to go, we back our attack, let's go for it. Or do you think they're going to go, right, no, we'll go back to, we'll play if we have to, but...
It depends on the situation, I guess.
I just think that they will go back to...
I can't see them getting too behind. There again, they got behind against Wales. But Wales used literally a unique strategy. It's never been done before.
Give them all the ball, just let them attack, and we'll defend.
It has been done.
What was that? It wasn't Ali, was it? It was no famous boxing fight where someone just let the other player box themselves out.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, rope a duck trick.
Yeah.
Yeah,
was it
Ollie?
It was definitely Ollie.
That wasn't the Rumble in Jungle, was it? Foreman.
I don't know.
I'm sure someone more knowledgeable than us on boxing will tell us. But I think Rocky. There was one of the Rocky episodes where he did it as well.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
He just let the other guy punch himself out, and then
must be a viable strategy then if Rocky did it.
Yeah.
Completely. I can't remember.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine. You were saying you feel sorry for Scotland. Finn Russell again looks exciting.
So Finn Russell, excellent. I love Stuart Hogg. Like Stuart Hogg, he's like something from he's like something from a film. So Ireland are offloading. Scotland look like they're like like they're in trouble, about to break, and he just comes in on this sideways angle, intercepts the ball, and he's off. Like, do you know that scene where everyone's under siege and all of a sudden the hero just shows up and saves the day? That is Stuart Hogg over and over again.
So we need more pictures of him with like big explosions and stuff going on in the background.
Absolutely. Yeah. He always seems to be there to pick off an offload or intercept a pass, and he's away.
What if Stuart Hogg had downed the ball?
Yes. That's a very good question.
We'll get to some what ifs in a little bit, I reckon.
Yeah.
There's quite a few. So, Ireland, powerful, dominant, attacking, and then controlled, just got the job done. And I mean, they must have thought, there we go.
Yeah,
it's ours.
Done.
Yeah. So, the points difference, they were 26 points better than England going into it. I think they were 10 points better than Wales. So, the Wales were out of it. England need to beat France by 27 points.
What's that music, JB, we needed to get?
Oh, Co-op DM Super League. It's hilarious. It's even more hilarious the fact that they still use it.
DM Super League.
Co-op DM. It's, if you're not a Super League fan and you've never watched Super League, which probably the majority of our listeners...
Let's get it up then. Is it epic music?
It's so funny. So 90s, isn't it? T-R-Y!
And then here we came.
No, wait for it to kick in. And this is on every highlights package now. It's been on since 1990 till now.
So then we went to Twickenham. Right, I mean, I was excited about the game. I thought, well, I hope we win first. And then if we can just maybe convince him win, that'll be good. I didn't think it would be as close as it was. I thought it would be 26-0 or 29-3.
Mm. Yeah.
Not 55-35.
So France had only conceded 46 points in the previous four games.
Fact.
Their defence was the best in the tournament going into this. And then, you know what happened. It was just ridiculous from start to finish.
How many tries were there in this game?
Eleven, I think.
Wow,
it was incredible.
Fact,
it was incredible.
If there was a worry for England, though, it was out wide. Every time the ball was shipped, the French Fijian, with his name again, please.
Nakatasi.
Sorry, his name again, please. As Eddie Butler would say,
Noah Nakatasi.
Nakatasi.
Thank you.
And what's the name? What was the name of that French hooker that came on as a replacement? I think I might have his name here.
Benjamin Kaiser.
Benjamin.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
Benjamin
Kaiser.
He knows what he's doing.
He doesn't, this idiot.
I don't think he does.
Ridiculous.
Benjamin Kaiser.
Oh, God.
Wow.
I think that was more a sign that England went for it. Right from the start, the wings were coming off and they were joining into line everywhere.
Maybe.
So that when the ball was turned over, like when Young's passed it to Laws and he dropped it and Tiller's board, there was not a single person within 15 metres of him. And there'd just been a line out on that side of the pitch and every single Englishman had looped right the way round and was already on the other half of the pitch. Mm. It was Dan Cole was the closest man and he was 15 metres away and... very quickly going further and further away as we're trying to chase Tiller's
board. The French went ahead, there was like this horrible look on all the French faces, like, my God, we're quite good at this. Why have we wasted the last 8 weeks smoking and eating Fargo?
I thought the two best players in the French side were the two wingers.
Oh, definitely.
And that's not just because it was that game. I actually genuinely think potentially... Well, no, in fact, I think potentially the best three players... The best three rugby players France have are their back three.
I think
Spedding was awesome.
Yeah.
Ouge
must secrete something from his glands that just makes him slippery. Like, you just can't get hold of him. Yeah. If you could get whatever he secretes, it probably makes engines run more efficiently. And, you know... He's amazing. That would be the worry for me. I just don't think they're that mature out wide. I think Jonathan Joseph, as good as he is going forward, and Anthony Watson and Jack Noll, they just seem to struggle a bit against real high quality Unpowerful backlines.
No, I think it was more because they were having to go for it, and they then found themselves out of position, and that was then exploited.
Here's a question, right? If three teams have won handsomely using a strategy of just going for it, why is this not the default strategy? Can anyone answer that?
Good question.
It is a good question.
They have beaten the three bottom teams. Yes. The three top teams have beaten the three bottom teams using that strategy. I wouldn't.
And let's not forget how awesome watching Wales Ireland was anyway.
That was an awesome game.
That was an awesome spectacle anyway.
Is it the best game I've ever seen? It's up there. It's in like top five.
The England France game was one of the best. It's infuriating as an Englishman. Just because every time England seemed to score and get back in it, some silly mistake would allow France to coast in from 30 yards.
Now, a very well officiated game.
Oh, extremely well officiated.
In general, a couple of things were missed.
Well, that's why it was good, Phil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I just play the best moment of the officiating?
Yeah, of course you can.
Are you not playing? Well, he was just lying in the red line.
No, he wasn't. He's fine. No, he moved. Christopher? Thank you.
Christopher!
Wow.
There was another great moment as well.
Calling for things in the rough when I'm reffing the game. You will not be finishing this game. Is that clear? I suggest you get back to your position and get on with your own game.
Yes, sir.
Two of you, that behaviour is not acceptable. It ends now. Is that clear? Back you go.
I love the respect.
That was to Mike Brown, wasn't it?
That was to Mike Brown. He said, yes, sir. Yes,
when
sir.
Mike Brown was wouldn't make eye contact, shifting uncomfortably.
Looking down like a little primary school boy.
Yeah, Mike Brown, I don't imagine, takes too well to being spoken to in that manner.
He took it well.
I'm sure he did.
Yes, sir.
But in general.
Yeah, you could see he was angry about it, not taking it well. but did, he on the face of it, did everything he needed to
do. There was a guy, right, who... he got yellow carded for Broughton Park a few weeks ago. Joe Noon, his name is. And
Does he have a huge jaw in relation to Jamie?
No. Great, incredible, very, very good player, though, in fairness. But he's a little younger, and he loses his head. And he got yellow carded for agreeing too vigorously with a ref. So he commits a penalty.
What, like sarcastically agreeing? Yeah, sure, sir, sure.
the ref gives away the penalty. He's really, really angry, mostly with himself. Gets up, he goes, penalty for offside. He goes, I know it's offside! This is why he gave the penalty! He goes, yellow card! It's like, sir, he just agreed with you. Off.
It reminds me of playing a sevens tournament where all the players had different things that they had to do. Like, one guy had to kick every time he got the ball.
One guy had
to throw a 50-yard pass, like, as far as he could every time he got the ball. And one of them was to argue with the referee, regardless of which direction the decision was given. Sir, how can you give that try for us? It can't possibly be a try. It's a forward pass. He's not grounded it.
But we played a game yesterday where, no matter what happened, we had to disagree with our coach during the England game. So, like, he was getting animated, saying, "Sir, it was offside." Like, no, absolutely not, guy. How can that be offside?
Did you instigate that by any chance? Flying in the face of authority.
It's a very, very funny game, though.
One observation.
Don't kick it.
One observation about the England game, I felt, in contrast to the rest of the tournament, where the bench has made a bit of an impact, I actually felt the bench was really weakened England. Kieran Brooks made some really bad handling errors.
Yeah.
Really.
I agree with that.
Danny Cipriani, he had an opportunity. I just
ran into touch.
I know, it's like
2 minutes ago.
Cool heads under pressure.
I couldn't quite work
fullback.
Out.
Fullback.
He came on for Watson and Brown went to the wing.
And he just ran himself.
That's why I thought it was weird, though.
Ran himself into fullback. Although I was a bit upset with Mike Brown just doing the little kick through.
Lancaster, right.
Yeah.
10 metres out.
And Brown should have come inside Cipriani when Cipriani was running to the touch. They should have recognised that.
I don't know what to make of Lancaster. I gave him all the credit in the world after the England victory over Wales. I thought that was a significant victory, and I thought they were on an upwards trajectory. But I just don't know what to make of him now. The way he's treated Danny Cipriani of the Six Nations has been pretty ropey.
What are you talking about?
Lancaster.
The way he's treated Danny Cipriani?
So, like, when
what,
he needs...
selecting him in the squad and then in the 23?
Yeah, but why? I mean, what...
So what do you mean, and why?
He's not there to be a fullback. They need someone to change the game against Italy. They gave him 3 minutes.
There was an injury.
Ireland.
Ireland.
And they only gave him 3 minutes.
So? George Ford. How many caps has George Ford got? Less than 10. And he's going to be England's 10 in a World Cup. I'd give him every single minute.
And England were...
But they're chasing the
minutes,
game.
But they were effectively chasing the game as well because they were coming back into it in the last 10 minutes.
He needed some game time and bringing them on. I mean,
why?
I feel he either doesn't trust Cipriani or he just doesn't really want him there.
I don't understand this because we live in Manchester and I listen to a load of Sale fans sort of in a one-eyed fashion bleating exactly what you've just said.
I agree with them.
And I just don't get it because, George. Let me just say again, George Ford is our 10 and has got less than... two handfuls worth of caps. Mm-hmm. He's going to be England's playmaker and main man and decision maker in a World Cup. And understanding how to either chase a game, because that was the equivalent of being 26 points behind.
So you're saying that giving George Ford experience is more important than playing the right players in the right situation?
When Owen Farrell, assuming Owen Farrell's fit for the World Cup, who are the two tens going to be in his squad? It's going to be Ford and then Farrell, with Cipriani as your third man.
See, I kind of think
maybe
that...
even Henry Slade, because he can occupy more positions in the back.
Now you're talking.
Yes, and that allows you to have an out-and-out back three, because Slade covers 10 and 7.
So why give Cipriani minutes just to keep Cipriani involved and happy
when you've
got a 10 who needs every minute he can before the World Cup?
There's a couple of things here. Do you categorise giving George Ford game time over winning a game? If the answer's yes, well then I can see your point.
Well, I don't understand your point. And this is where I think Danny Cipriani is going to be the third choice, because he is like more of the same of George Ford, only not as good at kicking.
What do you mean, off the tee?
George Ford's kicking off the tee has been excellent in the Six Nations.
Maybe. I'd say he's a better out-of-hand kicker, though. I think he's probably the best out-of-hand kicker.
Well, no.
Like 1 and 1A. But also, on that same note... if Cipriani is your second guy, because I think he does a lot of things naturally better than Farrell, he's a better natural rugby player than Farrell. If you went with Cipriani, I'd understand that, and he's only one injury away from playing an entire World Cup game. Cipriani should have had more time, and I don't think he'll get any more time because I don't think Lancaster trusts him.
To win by 26 points, let's put that one. Stuart Lancaster's whole focus was winning the game by 26 points, mm-hmm. and they came within a hair's breadth of doing
that. They didn't do it, though,
did they? And George Ford was absolutely instrumental in that. I don't understand what taking off George Ford and bringing on Danny Cipriani for a longer would have done to have made England closer to achieving their objective.
I'm not saying it was the right decision for this game, but certainly 3 minutes at the end of Ireland was not the right decision. I know
that. But he didn't bring him on at 10 there.
Yeah.
He brought him on because of an injury to another player.
So, actually, if you're chasing the game, I think I would go for Danny Cipriani.
Over George Ford?
I think so.
I wouldn't, personally.
I wouldn't. It's not the given that a replacement will come on. And I don't think he threw him on against Ireland because he was a replacement. I think he threw him on because a player had taken a knock.
I would say you probably want someone to change the game. And if you have him many points down against Ireland, bring him on, see what he can do. And that's exactly what I would have done. Exactly.
Well, yeah.
I don't understand what you get from Cipriani that you don't get from Ford. I think Ford's got everything Cipriani
got.
Ford
is better than Cipriani in every department.
I think I'd rather have George Ford at 10. Simple.
Yeah, I think he's better at virtually every. I think Cipriani's probably a little bit quicker. That's about it.
I would say Cipriani and George Ford, there's not much in them. I think George Ford's got more development. I think Cipriani's probably a little bit steadier, probably, like I say, a bit quicker, and he's probably better to opening up the game.
I don't think so.
I really don't think so.
I mean, when he's gone to
he's
say...
He's definitely a better out-of-hand kicker. Definitely.
I don't agree.
I don't agree with that either.
I really don't agree with that. I think his out-of-hand kicking is average at best, and some of his decision-making of when to kick is very poor.
Some of his decision-making about when to run at a touchline when you're trying to win a game, or when to run into touch. Anyway, I think we're getting into an area we don't need to talk about.
I enjoyed that.
Because George Ford has been one of the best players of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Comfortably. I think we should focus on his amazing attacking rugby rather than whether Cipriani got 3 or 4 minutes in a different
let's talk
position.
About tens. I have a theory, and it goes something like that. If you have the three best tens in a single squad, and one of those tens is Dan Biggar, it doesn't matter who the other two tens are, Dan Biggar will always start. that is my new theory.
Okay, so hypothetically...
Hypothetically, yeah. Give me two tens.
So... Gitto,
yep.
Dan Carter,
yep.
and Dan Biggar,
yep.
and
Dan Bigger would eventually get a start and he would never lose that job.
He would up his game to the point that he is... if the best 10 in the world is in that squad, he will become the
what
best 10
happen,
in the world.
Right, in that situation is, one would get injured, and then the second one would get injured, and Dan Bigger would finally get his chance and he would never lose that starting job ever again. And he's done it in Ospreys, he's done it in... I don't think he's ever been dropped.
He's like the Tom Brady of rugby.
Exactly
what he
is.
The American footballer who he was a ninth round or seventh round pick or something for the New England Patriots. He's now one of the best... quarterback of all time.
He would do, Dan Bigger would do just enough to keep that job.
Interesting theory.
Yeah, it's a fact. It's not a theory.
Sorry, interesting fact. Very interesting.
Going back to the England game, I think, again, and if I listened back to some podcasts from a year ago, I think I'd be saying, I know that I was saying different things, but with every single game, and I still think it's going to be too early for England with this World Cup. But I think with every game, Chris Robshaw becomes more of a leader.
Yeah, he just becomes more Chris Robshaw,
and more
of
an international calibre player. Yeah. And I thought he was absolutely awesome again.
Yeah,
I think he's a good leader. Yeah, I think he is. I think, like I say, he's good at everything, which is not outstanding.
I thought there was a few players who were really outstanding. I thought Courtney Laws.
Yeah.
Robshaw, Billy Vunipola. I thought Billy Vunipola was awesome. Yeah. Ben Youngs, I think that's the best game I've seen him play ever. Mm. Apart from the one pass to Laws that went astray for Tillisport's try, he was excellent. Mm. His running game, his distribution, a couple of tries.
Yeah.
It's great strength for the second try to shrug off Bernard Leroux and go under the sticks. Yeah,
that's not too bad at all, actually,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
It's a shame his brother didn't have the best of games, because, we know that the French hooker came on and seemed to solidify their line-out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's him.
But Tom Youngs came on, and his line-out throwing was a big problem.
I think it's very hard to come on after Hartley, or Dills, as he's named in the squad, because he's such a consistent... set piece operator.
Mm.
So you come on after him, you can only really go downhill.
Mm.
I think Hartley is head and shoulders England's best hooker now. Head and shoulders.
I hope it doesn't. Tom Youngs is so destructive around the field that I hope it doesn't cost him anything. But I mean, those are the times when your basics have got to be on the money. And there were two lineouts, 5 meters out, and he botched both of them,
isn't he? Is Weber injured?
I don't actually know. But he's not been. It's been those two. It's have been one two, and two.
Yeah,
the whole tournament.
I don't think he's going to lose a squad position, because I don't think there's anyone close to those two outside of Weber. And if Weber's not available,
But I mean, if Weber's available, he'd be. I mean, Tom Youngs would be devastated if he was missing out on the match day 23.
I think Tom Youngs gives him does a lot of things a lot different
absolutely,
because of his carry.
Absolutely, but the point I'm making is, if you want that was as close as you're going to get in some senses the intensity of the rugby and the what was at stake to World Cup knockout rugby, and albeit England were winning by 20 points, the fact is they needed a try before the end of the match, and he had two opportunities. England worked their absolute socks off to get in a position 5 metres out, and he bodged both up.
Yeah.
What do you think of this? It's an idea I've had for a feature, right? And it is to dispel certain rugby myths and why things are as they are. So it's not for this week, but some people might have ideas. Number one is, why do hookers have to throw in?
It's a good point.
Why?
Because they're generally the shortest in the lineup.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So you want taller guys lifting and jumping?
There we go.
That would be it.
Yeah, and suddenly you've got Steve Thompson, who was 6'2".
6'2", yeah.
I think that probably would... I mean, but why not a scrum half?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you want, if you're going to go off the top, you want the scrum half at 9, so you can go off the top, because you don't really want your hooker or one of your back rowers trying to throw a 30-yard pass.
Yeah.
By rights, you've got Yeah, you've got your two props lifters because they're massive lumps.
Yeah.
You've got your number eight two locks jumpers because they're athletic tall. Seven is normally smaller. So I'd say the only other person that probably should be Hooker or seven.
Yeah, but you often, certainly defensively, you want your seven at the tail of the lineup. Well, it's not going to be.
Yeah, because they're defending the 10.
The 10, yeah, because they'll be quicker.
And that also nowadays, sevens aren't like nil back sevens, well, they're like Warburton sevens.
One of the reasons I thought of this is because there was some serious talk in the England camp. And actually, it sounds absurd now, but they were thinking of having Will Greenwood go in the lineup. Because he was lighter than everyone else,
and he's one of the throw him up.
Yeah, and he was one of the tallest players.
Yeah, 6'4".
Now, why is that absurd? Well, he's one of the tallest players at 6'4", and at the moment that wouldn't really measure up to even being an open side. I mean, the same height as Sam Warburton.
Well, that's how rugby's moved on. Yeah. Speaking of how rugby's moved on, what an athlete Courtney Laws is.
Yes, oh, God.
Let's just listen to that moment he hit Plisson, the French fly half.
England away now, lost now!
Nice team with the power to make it available. Courtney Laws of
Wow! I've not actually seen that with the sound.
Yeah, ended him. That's exclusive Egg Chasers microphones that were on Freaky. the sidelines at Twickenham. No, the BBC did not pick up on that, but
England
what?
Away, no,
what an unbelievable hit.
Isn't that just what he does though? It's on his CV.
Highlight reel stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was watching that with my girlfriend and she was like, oh my God, is that legal?
Is he allowed to do that?
What's happened?
Pretty sure the rugby authorities weren't entirely sure if it was legal or not. They had to refer, are you allowed to hit this hard?
Yeah.
So incredible.
I think we're only a short way away from big hits being outlawed. You just can't hit that hard.
It's incredible to hit that hard. And we've got an exclusive Egg Chasers interview now with the vertebrae, the spinal cord of Plisson following yesterday's match.
No, this is horrible. Turn that off. Turn that off immediately. I hate that. I could not listen to it. I'm taking my headphones off.
Oh, dear.
Is it finished?
It's the way his neck snapped as like whiplash effect, wasn't it?
It was.
God.
Something else.
Oh, that goes through me.
You could almost make an argument because he actually... The first part of Plisson's body that hit the ground was his head, because of the force.
What spear tackle are you thinking?
Well, you could...
Where's the duty of care, Phil?
Exactly. He's taken him off the floor.
Exactly.
He's brought him down head first, feet in the air.
Straight red.
Yeah.
Safety first and foremost.
Exactly.
I was expecting, after the TMO asked to watch it, I was expecting a late tackle just because he smashed him.
Yeah.
But I quite like the... I was absolutely delighted.
Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nigel Owens is the best at that. And do you know what else I like? I like the fact that he awarded a try when it wasn't a try for Billy Vunipola. Was it Billy scored?
Gave it straight away, yeah.
Just gave it. I don't need to see that again.
Yeah.
Giving it.
Billy and the... the Nakatasi one where he arguably dropped the ball.
Well, arguably.
And there was a hair's breadth. That was.
But he gave it. I mean, I like that.
He did review that one, and it took him a couple of minutes to decide.
I think I've come to the conclusion about what makes a good ref.
Fast decisions,
and if there's eight infringements, only call three of them.
Yeah, I do agree with that point, because we say it all the time, every single rook, you could ping either team for something. It frustrated me a little bit in that last couple of minutes where England were on France's line, and he blew up for a... England going off the feet of the rook.
Such a subjective call, isn't it?
It's such a... Like, that has been happening virtually every single rook all game. Mm. Why pick that moment when you've got such a big, huge spectacle? Like, the whole tournament is on the line.
You're sounding a little bit like me.
I am.
But why enforce the laws when they're the laws, Phil?
No, there's differences. There is a difference.
And you support England.
And that wasn't unsafe. I'm very much safety first and foremost.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. It was almost harder to bear that we got so, England, we, yeah, me and Phil, for me and Phil, it was we got so close. And then not just so close as in within 6 points, but then so close as in within 5 yards.
I know.
Yeah. Oh.
I tell you what, when the way that game ended.
Oh, and I loved, the way that game ended, when you thought, oh, they've given him a penalty, they'll kick it into touch, tap, go. I was like, yes!
Yeah.
When they did that, this isn't a joke, I stood up and I applauded. Bravo. tap and go. There's nothing in it for you.
On
but
your own
it's
line,
a spirit of
go.
Rugby.
Yeah,
it is.
Right
and,
there.
And there was, again, we'll have to, it's choice language. So this language is warning. This is not safe for work. But this is a video which Chris Jane tweeted us. Is this of him watching it?
No, this is some Irish fan. This is brilliant.
An Irish fan watching the last minute. So on the one hand, there's that penalty, which we were just talking about, which was given against England. A yard out from France's line, and you're thinking, Ireland are thinking, game over, we've held out, we've won the Six Nations. Then France tap and go. Again, if you're easily offended, just take your headphones out or turn this off for just a second.
Time up! Time up! Yes! Yeah! Yeah! Beauty night! You did him! What the fuck are you doing, France? France! Kick it dead! Kick it dead! You're not going to win the game! Kick it dead! Blow the whistle, Nigel! Get rid of it! We love you! Yeah!
I'm suspicious about this. I want to believe it, but I don't.
Go home, Christopher! Go home!
I think I'm with you, JB. I'm quite cynical, and I think he's done that retrospectively.
I think he has as well.
Yeah, but...
We need to look into this, chap.
I'll be honest, I was shouting very similar, but the other way.
The other way, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, Fred, what are you doing? Play! Play!
Keep playing.
I think it might be the last time we see James Haskell in white, though.
Finally! Oh, my God! Hear me now, believe me later! James Haskell's got terrible hands. He cannot... He's a physical specimen, but he doesn't play rugby.
I love him. I just felt he had a bad game.
He did. Him and Big Loof. Big Loof didn't have a good game.
The other player who isn't great, he's certainly not the best player on the team, is Jack Noll. And... if I was going to wear something to make myself look like another player, I'd probably try and look like George Ford. So at least when the cameras pan over and there's that moment, is it Haskell or is it Noel? And you get mixed up. Yeah. At least if it's like, is that Haskell or is it George Ford?
Yeah, there was a couple of times I went knock on by Noel and it was Haskell.
Butler got him confused a little bit.
Yeah, so my tip for Haskell is dress up like a better player. At least then, like,
you might get
confused. But, that's a great kick for sticks by Haskell. It's just an idea.
Good try by, looking like Billy Vunipola or George Ford would have been a good
dress
call.
Dress up like, either of those two.
Is that James Haskell smashing police on the halfway line?
Yeah. Right, let's pick a team of the tournament. But before we do that, we should, and I think we need some dramatic music for this, because we had over 600 teams enter our fantasy rugby league, and thank you very much for getting involved. We were once again the biggest and best league out of all leagues, but we have one winner who is going to be kitted out in some gorgeous Canterbury stash. Only the best for our winners. And that winner is, Phil?
Big congratulations to...
Me?
Not you, JB.
Okay.
We had 618 entrants and you finished 602 out of 618.
Yes!
So only 16 people behind you. In first place was Michael Clark's Wild Walkers with 377 points, which put him 56th in the whole entire world.
Wow.
Who he beat next in the Egg Chasers League, Alan Kirk, who had Welford thirds. He beat him by 7 points.
What? So,
good on you.
What's his worldwide score, Alan Clark?
Or? 56th Clark. Overall, worldwide.
56th in the world.
How big was our league compared to everyone else's?
Way bigger.
Way bigger.
Have you got the biggest league in the ESPN?
Yes, we do.
Biggest and best.
Biggest and best.
So we've got the biggest and best ESPN league in the known universe. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Michael Clark, you have got 250 quid's worth of Canterbury stash you could pick from that beautiful gold top that JB's wearing right now.
Yeah, it makes you look and feel like Jeff Parlin.
I like these tracksuit bottoms that I'm wearing. They are...
And these ones which I'm wearing.
It feels like... just angels cupping at you after a gym session beautiful fleece-lined tracksuit on. I love it. So well done, and thank you for everyone that got involved. We'll be doing that for the World Cup, don't you worry. So, start sharpening your tools for that one. Our team of the tournament, then. So let's divide...
Is it worth doing a team of the tournament, or why don't we just read out the...
Go on. I think we should do both.
He clearly knows his stuff.
Who was in Michael Clark's team?
So this week he didn't actually do as well as some of the other people. He scored 106 points, and he had...
Who were his star performers?
George Ford.
Yeah. Ben Youngs.
He had Conor Murray. He had George North, hat-trick, Liam Williams, Jonathan nice. Davis, Billy Vunipola, nice. His try. Paul O'Connell, who got the try as yeah. well. So that was his performance this week.
Well, I think we should pick a best team. And here we go. You've got... let's split up the team into thirds and we all take control of one third. We can chip in on each other's, but Phil, your expertise is out wide. So you take centres and back three.
Yeah.
I'll take back row, half backs. JB, take front five. Mm-hmm. Start with your front five. Who's your front five of the tournament?
Interesting. Well, it's not going to be anyone... any of the Welsh props. That's for sure. I think the French ones have been kind of up and down. Mm-hmm. And it really pains me to do this, but I think England have had some of the most consistent props. I think Marler has been exceptional.
He's been awesome.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you on that.
And it's probably England's most competitive position, bar second row.
Yeah.
So to be ahead of that list is very, very good.
Now, the Irish love Rory Best. I mean, they think he's got another 15 years left.
At least.
Minimum. Yeah. I mean, that should be the minimum length of his next contract.
Are you going to say your best hooker's Cronin? You about to say that?
Absolutely not.
All right.
As the tournament went on, he got stronger and stronger. Ken Owens looked brilliant yesterday, but I think overall it's got to be Dylan Hartley.
Right.
Yeah.
I think Dylan Hartley is really very good.
A little shout for Giraldini, because in a poor Italian team, he actually performed really well. I thought loads of ball carries and his set piece was good.
Guillaume Garrido, who got a couple of assists at the weekend as well. His handling was superb.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll go with Hartley as well, who didn't get a yellow card, astonishingly.
Well done, you.
Well done, Dylan.
He has grown. Yeah. And Tighthead, are you going Dan Cole then?
I am going Dan Cole.
Wow.
I think his work at the breakdown is excellent. There is no one in... Wales are kind of up in the air now, and the lovely thing about that is we will discover someone who is very, very good. We're bringing in all these lads. We've got... Who's the guy from Exeter who is...
Francis,
who's meant to be absolutely huge. So one of these lads will be good enough to play. And we'll just have to find out which one.
I was impressed by the Welsh scrum, how it held up against the big Italian pack. So, yeah, I agree with that.
Maybe. I think the Italian pack is now turning into a bit more of a cliche than an actual real force of nature.
What's your second rose?
Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yeah, definitely.
Just gets better with age, and he's only 27. I mean, imagine how good he's going to be by age of 35.
Imagine how old he's going to look by the time he's 35. And is it going to be, surely?
The war horse himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be,
he's stabled up now until the World Cup.
Oh, Carnal. And he'd be the team captain. What a leader.
Awesome.
To lose Brian O'Driscoll and have someone to lead your side with the pedigree and experience and leadership skills of that man.
I think he's been leading the side for far longer.
Yeah.
Than that. I think he's probably the default captain, even when O'Driscoll was there.
But to have both, that was so rare to have one in a generation, but to have two like that.
He captained the Lions Tour before last, which O'Driscoll was on.
2009.
Yeah, he did. All right, well, I'll go back row. It's very competitive. Very competitive.
That's obvious, isn't it?
Billy Vunipola is your eight.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely go with that.
And then six and seven... it's particularly difficult to select between players.
Go on.
Rob Shaw and Warburton. I'd try and accommodate both.
Interesting.
I don't disagree with you.
I think there are other contenders.
You've taken a bit of an easy way out there, because Warburton and Rob Shaw should be up against each other you should be forced to pick an actual six.
Yeah.
With the exception of the French six, because he's a seven, so you can pick the French seven.
So you can pick Bernard Leroux as
yes,
a six.
Correct.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
Go on. If you had to pick a six, and hang on, just...
Yeah.
Hello? Is that it? Where do you think I am?
Put her on speakerphone. Put her on speakerphone, Jay.
No. Right. All right, bye-bye.
Everything all right?
She forgot to set the alarm. Wow. Wow.
Okay. It'd be Peter Omani, 6.
I thought he had quite a quiet tournament by his standards.
But I don't. But this is what I mean. I don't think there were any sixes that covered themselves in glory.
Lydia played well.
Haskell's the last game. Lydia's class.
Lydia played well.
Yeah, but I don't think he was incredible.
No, he wasn't Lydia 2 years ago. Of the sixes,
Omani and... Or Mahoney. I don't know if that's just Eddie Butler. That's how he says it. I don't know if that's how it should be. Tell me, Irish fans. I would go... Personally, overall, all five games, Robshaw over Warburton. Warburton looked awesome against Italy.
Well, do you know what I'd do, Tim? I'd probably go with Warburton at 7 and Robshaw at 6. Well, that'd be how I'd do it.
Oh dear. So, but I mean, do you disagree? Do you think Warburton? What do you think, Phil?
I think it's very, very close. I think you could pick either of those two. I think Sean O'Brien has. In the last game was absolutely sensational, and hopefully he gets a good long stint of fitness.
And then he'll probably trump them both.
Potentially, yes.
And halfbacks, now you might be expecting me to pick Ben Youngs over the tournament. I think Conor Murray was the best 9, and I think George Ford was the best 10. But I could understand if Ben Youngs got the nod.
Oh, and I could understand if Webb got the nod as well. Mm. I thought he was really good. But yeah, happy with that. And then centres... And back three, I would go for Henshaw and Joseph in the centres. I don't think there was a really standout 12.
Oh, Jamie Roberts. How can you say that?
No, Jamie Roberts. He got stronger and stronger against Ireland and against Italy. He was awesome.
He's a standout rugby player. I know what you mean here, because he's a standout rugby player.
He didn't get the ball against England at all.
But he's won. Yeah. But he's not maybe the best 12. You know, if you're critiquing 12s as what you want a 12 to do.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
He's still the best at what he does.
Had some, yeah. At what he does, he's the best, but whether he's the best 12, he's definitely the best ball centre.
Did you not think Mermoz, on the strength of... I wouldn't say he would get in as your team in the tournament because it was only one game, but he was awesome against England. His footwork is ridiculous.
Yeah, he was very good, but I think Henshaw, considering how young he is, and I think he played every single minute for Ireland, scored the most crucial of tries against England.
Yeah, true.
It just goes
his defence was awesome.
It just goes back to what I say, like, it's all about opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, they could have gone with Darcy,
Joseph wouldn't have possibly wouldn't have got a game.
Exactly. And this is why Stuart Lancaster is the luckiest coach in the world. Because his genius plan was to start these games with Brad Barrett, hilariously. Brad Barrett goes down, what does he do? He picks the polar opposite. God knows how he comes to these conclusions. Because they're completely different players. But yeah, okay, we'll go with that.
My wings would be... I struggled a little bit on the wings. I don't think anyone's been absolutely exceptional. I think a lot of people have had bright sparks and then some quieter moments. But I've gone for George North and the ridiculously exciting at times, Nakatasi.
Yeah. By the way...
With a little chat for Ouje, because I think in a French team that hardly used him, he did manage to look classy quite
a lot. Yeah, but Ouje played, I think, every game, whereas Nakatasi only came in at the end when France were really on the up.
Can I say something about Nakatasi?
Yeah.
The best dummy kick in the world. He does it all the time.
Where he holds the ball one hand.
Pretends to kick and carries on running. He did it twice, I think, in one run.
And a fullback? Because this is one of the other, in terms of the tournament, there's some amazing fullbacks.
Stuart Hogg.
Yes.
I love watching Stuart Hogg. I think he combines everything beautifully well.
Yeah. He's like an exciting Lee Hoffman, isn't he?
Yeah, because his defence is awesome, because it has to be. under the high ball, he's great. His attacking is awesome. Carney was very, very solid, but didn't do much going forward. Halfpenny, again, kicking superb, didn't do much going forward. Mike Brown probably would be my second choice, just because, again, I think when England didn't have him against Ireland, you really saw how much they missed him. And when he does play, he's always excellent.
Knowing not in games like the ones we saw yesterday on Saturday, and just in general games, the importance of goal kicking, I just think I changed my mind from the start to the end. I would probably, if I was picking a Lions team, I probably would pick Lee Halfpenny purely to kick sticks.
Absolutely. Well,
which is the negative choice. When you see the rugby on offer, I'm doing what we don't want the coaches to do, and I'd be going inside my shell. But I thought his kicking was ridiculous.
He is a ridiculous kicker.
Well, he didn't have the best average across the tournament.
Really?
Of the people who took more than 5 shots at goal, Greg Laidlaw was the best with 94%, 15 out of 16.
Very good.
That's good.
That's very good.
And how good was it to see him choking up in the national anthem?
Yeah.
Does anyone remember Graham Van Straaten?
Yes.
He was on something ridiculous, like, I want to say 49 out of 50 kicks for South Africa.
Wow. I'm not going to use the fact button.
No, don't. Really, don't do that.
That hasn't come from Phil.
Well, Patterson did it as well. He was on...
Yeah, that was a scumbag manoeuvre by Patterson, though, wasn't it?
Patterson taking anything...
Anything for the sticks.
10 metres either side of the sticks, up to about 30 metres back.
Do you know what we should do? We should have a YouTube video of kicking-style compilations. Or... We should get someone to simulate the kicking styles, and we have to guess, because he had the very distinctive one arm in the air.
Oh yeah,
metronome.
Yeah,
I mean the most ridiculous one at the moment is Quade Cooper.
Quade Cooper's ridiculous.
Followed by Rob Cook.
Oh no, he's changed it. He's changed his Richards one where he looks like he's in the woods having a dump.
Yeah,
he's not doing that anymore.
I think they call it the dump squat, don't they? yeah, we should do that.
Okay. It was. I mean, let's quickly run through some of those what ifs, right? We got a tweet sent into us, and before a ball had been kicked or try had been scored in the weekend, and they said, "What if?" And we got the answer to this, which I was quite pleased about. What if England are 6 points ahead, needing to win by 6 points, and France have a penalty? So they could win the match with a try, or they could deny England a win with a penalty. What would they do? And I would have liked to have thought before the match, France would go for the win.
They 100% would.
And they totally would. And that was nice to see. Some other what-ifs, Phil.
Well, from the first game, what if Leonardo Sarto had messed up that try which he scored in the end, which he almost did. It was a 2-on-1 and he decided to go himself and very nearly messed it up.
That would have been a Wales tournament victory,
because then Ireland are chasing 27 points instead of only 20.
But then would that have changed the way Ireland played, and would it have been out of England's reach? Who knows?
They would have had to play the same way they did for a longer period. They would have been chasing the game more, so they might have done some of those 50-50s that they held on to, that kind of thing. And then what if Stuart Hogg gets the ball down at the end? So England are only chasing 20 points, which is what they won by, rather than 27.
Do you know what might help? A bonus point system.
No, you can't do that in the Six Nations.
Because there's too few teams.
No, because you could then have a situation that you win every match, win the Grand Slam, but lose the tournament. 5 4-point wins is 20.
Could you use them as a tiebreaker?
5 4-point wins is 20 points. And then 4 wins and a losing bonus point. 4 5-point wins and losing bonus points.
Well,
21
what about
points.
If you had the points tally, wait for this, as the tiebreaker? And what wins you it is your win percentage, like in American football.
But that the scenario Tim was describing, you'd have 21 points for the team that won 4 out of 5 and 20 points for the team that won 5 out of 5.
No, because the points don't matter. Your win percentage is the first thing. So in American football... You have a 500 team or a 750 team or whatever it is.
Well, what you're saying.
So the win percentage is first. So if you've got 100% win percentage, you win the tournament.
Game over.
If no one else has that, and then you...
All right, so it's like a little coefficient, yeah.
But I do actually... Watching this round of rugby did make me think about, would it be a good thing or a bad thing to bring the bonus points in?
What we're sort of saying is we could have rugby a bit more like that, a bit more often.
Yes.
In weeks 1 to 4.
Well, the Premiership, in my opinion, does turn out some more attacking rugby because the squads are together for longer, they've got better systems in place, and they are incentivised to score. Doesn't take anything away from Six Nations, because you'll never see a defensive display like the Wales-Ireland game.
So just to recap JB's point, if you didn't quite follow it, what JB's saying is in NFL, they have a situation where teams are ranked on the basis of win-loss percentage, which is expressed out of a score out of one. So if you win every game, your score is 1.00, effectively 100%.
Yep.
And if you lose one game out of 10, your score would be 0.9.
Correct.
And 0.8 or however it would work out. So only in the event of someone not winning a Grand Slam or when someone is tied.
Although arguably you could just say we do have this already with points difference.
Well, points four rather than points difference.
That's not a bad shout.
At the moment it's points four. That's right, it's points difference. It's points difference. So it's in both attack and defence.
If you said it was in the points four column, who would have won if it was points four?
I think it was England. It was England, 157.
157 to Wales is 146, to Ireland's 119. Just emphasising that They won on points difference, Ireland, having only scored 119 points in the tournament, showing just how impressive their defence is.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Just and before we do the quiz, I just thought I'd let you know, JB, we have found someone who is probably less likely to win a quiz than you are.
Hey! Hilarious.
This person that appeared on Ejector Seat.
What is that?
It's a TV show.
Gareth Bale plays for which national football team?
John Issimalan.
He was so confident.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, my God.
If you keep losing, JB, then you will go up against him. just to give you an empty victory. But
maybe he's a rugby guy. Maybe football's not his. Maybe football's not his thing.
That is me at rugby.
Right, let's do this then, Phil. What you got?
Six questions. First question, very easy. What is Mike Phillips' first name?
Oh, no. No, I read it the other day.
I'll give you a clue, Tim. It is not Mike.
All right, fine. I don't know. I'll say Ivor.
Ivor.
I just picked a Welsh
is
name.
Is it Lewis?
What?
It's not either. It is William. It's his first name. William Michael Phillips.
Yeah, do you know what? Willie Phillips is a wicked name.
A lot of Welsh people do this. I had no idea that my grandfather's name was actually John until maybe 2 years ago.
Most Jacks back in the day, obviously recently it's become a fashionable name, but most Jacks were Johns.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Question number two. Who is the top point scorer in the Six Nations this year?
No idea.
I've written mine down.
Okay.
Ford.
George Ford, I've written down, you saw it.
Both correct with 75 points.
Good going.
Could have been Cipriani, though.
Okay.
Question three. I want you to name the Ulster players who are in the Ireland 23 this weekend. There are four players, of which three did start.
All right, cool.
So let's have a look at yours, Tim.
All right, I'm crossing them out and I'm showing you four.
Okay. You have got...
Oh, hang on. I've just got one more.
Oh, no, you can't. Come on. Okay. Show him.
Let's have a look.
You don't want to have a fix. You don't have a little asterisk next to a victory, JB.
Got it. Too late, mate. I've got it.
Okay, so the four I've got written down, Rory Best, Robbie Henshaw, Tommy Bowe, Jared Payne.
What have you done?
What?
Robbie Henshaw plays for Connacht.
Oh, no.
Yes.
So, Jay, your four are...
No.
Best.
Boat.
Payne. Henderson.
Ian Henderson.
Henshaw Henderson.
Yeah.
Oh, I just... Oh. JB, no. Was that the one you wrote down?
Henderson, yeah.
It was.
Yeah, I knew the sub. I couldn't remember
Not
who.
A fix.
Not a fix. I'll give him that. So we're currently 5 points to JB, 4 points to Tim. Question four. Who top scored in this weekend's Super Rugby?
Huh?
Who top scored? Which player top scored in this weekend's Super Rugby?
No idea.
And I'll give you a clue. Only one team scored more points than this one player in this round of matches.
I have zero idea.
Cruden.
You both got Cruden. It was Dan Carter.
Oh, I nearly went for Carter.
I nearly said Carter.
Who scored 27 points, including two tries.
He's so lucky that Dan Biggar doesn't play in his team. He would not get a game.
I'm getting nervous now. Question five, and JB's one ahead.
Question five.
This is the last question.
No, two more questions.
God damn it.
Only one Welshman has played...
Come on, this is a fix!
...has played every minute of this year's Six Nations. Who was it?
Okay.
I see. I'm going to say...
Tim has put Faletau. JB, you've put...
AWJ.
I think he went off in the last game. We were at the Millennium Stadium.
Alan Wynne-Jones did go off when we were at the Millennium Stadium.
Ooh!
And Talupe Faletau stayed on every minute of every game.
Yes!
Wow!
Come on!
Okay, last question. And get your pens ready, because I'm going to give you a little narrative. If the current Premiership TV deal with BT Sport is worth £150 million from 2012 to 2017, and the new deal between 2018 and 2023 is worth 80% more than that,
How much is the New Deal worth per club, per season, assuming that all clubs get the same amount?
He's so a blooming financial advisor.
So that again.
What, do I need the dates per season? Is it so per that season again, or is it over the...
If the current Premiership TV deal, the BT Sport, is worth £150 million from 2012 to 2017, and the new deal between 2018 and 2023 is worth 80% more than that, how much is the new deal worth per club per season? Assuming that all clubs get the same amount.
Okay.
Got it. Right. Come on, JB, your financial advisor. Quick, there's got to be a time limit on this. Surely.
And give him...
I'm pretty good at maths. I thought I was rubbish. You know when you do stuff at school? I don't know if I got it right yet. You know when you do it at school and you go... And you never use it again. But I've actually used something that... And that was... Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so this is for a draw or one of us to win. So should we just write down
so
a number?
Per season. Is it 10 teams or 12 teams?
Per team.
Per team per season. So, Tim, Jay, have you got a figure down there?
£4.5 million.
£4.5 million. Tim?
Oh, no, I've given it the big guns. We get it right. £2 million.
£2 million. Well, I can tell you that... So £150 million plus 80%.
Is another £120 million.
Which gets you to...
I've added it up all together. How much more is it worth per team?
How much is the new deal worth per club
per season?
Oh, no,
I've got how much more per season per team?
Answer the question I asked.
No.
Answer the question I asked him.
I'll show my workings. I know what I'm talking about. I've got it right.
I've got 270 for the deal.
Yes, 270 is correct.
Thank God.
No.
And there's 12 clubs.
I didn't listen to the question.
There's 12 clubs.
Yeah, I worked out it was 120 million more divided by 12 teams. 22.5
per club across five seasons, which is 4.5 million per club per season, which means that JB wins the quiz on a maths question.
Listen to this. Drop the mic.
What? What was that?
Dropping the mic and then walking off. That's like most wrestling promos. Just drop the mic at the end.
Oh, I knew the answer.
Did you? Because you didn't give the answer.
No, but I was working out how much more... I thought Phil had asked how much more is it per team per season.
Nothing for you working out here, Tim. 1 point for the correct answer.
Solid radio math, so, Tim. Just nervous.
I feel more stupid than the guy who said... AC Milan was the nation that Gareth Bale played for.
Oh, God for that.
Right, okay. Right, is that we done then? Should we go?
No!
I don't want to stop talking about the rugby that we just saw over the weekend, but we're going to have to because there's games coming up. Then the Aviva Premiership is back. The Guinness Pro 12 is back.
The Guinness Pro 12's back?
Yeah.
Brilliant news.
Yes. The LV Cup will not be back for two seasons.
Woo!
And who knows even then? Leicester against Exeter. How do you see that one going? Will the England players and internationals get time off, do you reckon?
I assume they will.
Not Exeter's.
Well, Jack Norr might.
Jack Norr might,
get a bit of a rest.
Leicester, Exeter. I hope Exeter bounce back for themselves. They were unlucky to win. I've got Leicester at home.
Leicester
Despite
at home.
Despite Miles Benjamin's two tries, Exeter will win this game.
Wow. I think Leicester at home will... Just have enough.
Mm. They've had a week off and stuff, haven't they?
They've patched up all their guys.
Yeah, and they can bring Manoa and Iurta, who'll be nice and fresh after a couple of weeks off. And Brad Manoa, Munipola.
Munipola,
Munipola and Brad Thorne and Kirchner and that type five will be ready.
Maybe I will go Leicester after all.
Irish Newcastle at the Medeski. This is the big Irish. Patrick's their Paddy's Day match.
Oh, is it?
They'll have a good old turnout of this one at the Medeski.
Yeah.
I'll let you call this one, Tim. You're the expert.
I'm going to go Irish.
That's good enough for me.
Newcastle do feel like they're on an upward trajectory, but I think,
only at home for me.
Yeah. Irish at home should just have enough.
All right. Saracens, Harlequins.
Saracens. Even at Harlequins.
It's not at Harlequins. It's at the Aviva, so that's... Allianz.
Oh,
Allianz.
Even more Saracens then.
Saris, yeah.
And then we flip over to Sunday and you've got Sale Gloucester.
Sale
at home.
Yeah.
Oh, Gloucester have just signed Tom Lindsay. who I really rate. Mm. That's the end of that story.
cool story, bro. Sale Gloucester.
Sale
for me
at home. Yeah. There are not too many people away with the internationals, have they?
No. And Northampton Saints at home to Wasps.
Northampton Saints at home to Wasps.
Saints.
Give me the Weasels.
The Northampton Saints for me, please, yep. Tim.
Awesome. And
London Welsh Bath.
London Welsh Bath.
50 ooh, points to Bath.
At the fence, Bath to dominate.
Comfortable.
And in Pro 12, there's a couple of good... Leinster Glasgow looks like being a good matchup. Again, yeah. You can imagine Ireland will just like go, rest up, boys.
Yeah.
Keep the feet up.
It'd be sensible to rest a few players after the Six Nations.
Munster against Connacht should be an interesting game.
Yeah, because again, Connacht don't really lose. They lose Robbie Henshaw. That's it.
That's it. Oh, damn Robbie Henshaw. Ian Henderson. Damn it.
I'd be more concerned about your maths.
Your maths was faultless, just you didn't listen to the question.
Well, listen, what an unbelievable weekend. Thank you very much for listening to the Egg Chasers podcast. Well, you can find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. You can subscribe at iTunes. You can find us on the Acast app. And keep an eye out on our Twitter page this week, because we will be running a very special super dry rugby competition. We've got the... Oh, I mean... I'm wearing a gorgeous super dry.
Is that one super dry
right
as well?
This is super dry.
Because I bought this one from Super Dry.
Yours is a super dry top. Yours is the kind of a Sergio Parise inspired.
It's where I make it look. But
Italian.
Yes, I do take those comments on board. Thank you, Tim.
And Phil, I think yours is called a Herculean shirt.
Oh, my
it?
Word. You've got Super Dry on as well.
That sounds about right.
In this new Super Dry line of rugby gear.
What are the chances of us all coming to the same podcast in Super Dry tops?
We've all got fantastic taste, it looks like.
Clearly.
Independently bought excellent super dry kit, but all slightly different as well.
Yes, so we can see the full range.
Exactly.
They have a new rugby range, which you will be able to get your mitts on by keeping an eye on Twitter and getting involved in the competition when we tweet it this week. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us there. JB, nice one. See you next time.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Phil, see you next week.
Thanks, Tim.
In a bit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.